My talk is on the mod physics of the organic materials. The organic materials are a family of materials with electron correlations. So the physics of electron correlation or magnetism or frustrated related phenomena are emergent in this family of materials. So on this occasion, I'd like to talk about the recent topics on the mod physics of organic materials. I'm happy if you have some overall picture about the interest of the organic materials in the field of the electron correlation. Okay, I'm going to talk about today the four topics, if the time is left. The first one is the mode transition, and superconductivity, and frustrated magnetism, namely spin liquid or spin orders on that, this problem. And finally, doping mode insulator. So before going to the experimental data, a little bit about organic materials. And organic or molecular materials seems very complex, complicated in real space like this. But in case space, it's this family of materials have very simple structures. Atom forms a molecule like a family, and this family forms a society, namely solid. And in molecules, the atomic structure is very simple, and in most cases, the structure of a molecule has a low symmetry. It means that in most cases, the molecular orbitals are non-degenerate, like this, and they are well separated. We call highly occupied molecular orbitals as the highest orbital molecules, which accommodates the electrons in high energy, and empty side, lowest unoccupied molecular orbitals. Anyway, the molecular orbitals are well separated in many cases. And when these molecules form solid, in that case, the intermolecular interactions gives their bond. But this intermolecular interaction is very weak. It's very weak, so this because the binding between electron molecules due to the van der Waals interactions. The van der Waals interaction is very, very weak in general. So this means that the bandwidth is very small compared with the inorganic materials for such as oxides or others. So each molecular orbital forms respective bands, not mixed. So the electricity or magnetism occurs in this single band. So if you think about, when you think about the electronic structure in organic molecules, it is enough to consider only one orbital in most cases. So you don't forget about the details of the inside molecule. That is the important point to enjoy the physics of molecular orbitals. So there's a reason why the electronic structure of the molecular solids is so simple. The tight binding of approximation of the molecular orbitals works well in this class of materials. Okay, this is the structure of materials I'm going to talk about now. The name of the material is kappa ET2X. ET is abbreviation of the molecule, the name of the molecules, this molecule, this planar molecule, planar molecule. And then, for example, the length of the molecule about 1 nanometer, and this is 0.3 nanometer in radius. And this plate molecule forms one monolayer, and this one monolayer forms a conducting layer. So good electrical conductivity attained along these planes. And X is an anion, and X plays an insulating layer here. So conducting layer and insulating layer. So like such a alternate stacking forms a solid like high TC cuprates. The copper oxide here and the block layer here. And this is the implant structures. If you look the implant structure along these lines, the implant structure looks like this. Two ET molecules form a strong dimer like this. So you can regard this dimer as a one super molecule. If so, this super molecule gives a one dimer orbital. So one molecular orbital comes from this dimer. Then this implant structure is modeled to this anisotropic tunnel lattice. And this lattice point corresponds to one dimer. Okay. And in many cases, the valency of X is minus one. This means the X draws electrons from ET2. This means that one hole is sitting on this lattice side. So this means that the band filling is a half. Lattice is anisotropic tunnel lattice. So this organic materials, copper ET2X, is a half-filled band system with anisotropic triangle lattice. And by changing the anion species, many kinds of the anion species like this, very complicated. But important point is that all of the anions, the valency is minus one and non-magnetic. So please take these anion as a spacer, vacuum or spacer, insulating spacer. An important point is that by changing the anion species, the material parameter is also varied. For example, the T prime over T, this anisotropy of the triangle lattice. For example, these materials has an isotropic triangle lattice. Maybe the value of T prime over T is around unity triangle lattice. But another material, this material has large deviation from the unity, 0.75. This means the T prime is smaller than T. This means that the lattice approaches toward the scalar lattice. So scalar lattice-like half-field band system, the triangular lattice half-field band system. So we have a variation in, yes?
So how is the T prime of T estimated?
Quantum chemical calculations. There are several methods, for example, the quantum mechanical chemical estimate. These values are obtained from the ab initio calculation. Several calculations give the different values. It's a debate. But important point is the according to, by single method, such a variation is obtained. So still a debate. Well, another ab initio calculations published recently gives the this material shows T prime T of unity. So it's very the value depends on the method. But anyway, overall tendency is this material is near the triangle lattice anisotropic triangle lattice. But this is the anisotropy of triangle lattice is large in this material. It's an overall tendency. And also, by replacing the anions, the correlation strength, U over T, is also varied. These two materials have large values of T over U over T. And in reality, these two materials are not insulators at ambient pressure. But other materials is metallic at ambient pressure. And then at low temperatures, they undergo superconductivity, superconducting transition. So, yes.
Is there an estimate of V, the nearest neighbor Coulombic portion?
There is an estimate, but in that case, it's a quantum chemical estimation. This means that without screening, in that case, for example, from according to the ab initio calculations, the on-site U is of the order of the 4 to 5 electron volt, and V is about a half of them. For example, 2 electron volt or 3 electron volt. But in real conductors, maybe this by due to the screening effect, maybe these values are decreased by a factor 3 or 4 or 5. But I'm not sure about in real conductors. Okay, so if you take or pick up these two materials, motor insulators, and if you use the pressure which control the electron correlations physically, and you can enjoy the physics of the motor insulator and metal and the critical behavior of motor transitions. Okay. And with this family of materials, or with given materials using pressure, you can enjoy the motor physics. This is a conceptual diagram of motor physics, is temperature and horizontal axis U over W, the motorness, the strength of the electron correlation. And in large U over W, W means the bandwidths. At low pressure here, high pressure here. At low pressures, all of the electrons are localized, so charge degrees of freedom dies out. So remaining degrees of freedom is spin. So spin physics is going on. And here, the mode transition occurs. The mode transition is purely genuinely in the physics in which goes on in charge degrees of freedom, okay, charge physics. And in the metallic side, superconductivity occurs in this class of materials. And superconductivity is a spin charge coupled phenomenon. So you can enjoy with this materials, the spin physics, charge physics, spin charge coupled physics, namely superconductivity. Today, I'd like to talk about the topics on the mode transition. One topic that is which is the quantum criticality of the mode transition, and in the insulating side, the physics of the spin fluctuation is shown, and here the fluctuation effect of the superconductivity is a very intriguing issue. So I'd like to show you some recent experiments, recent data on these topics. And finally, if the time is left, I'd like to talk on the very recent result on the doping spill liquid. Okay, first, high energy physics, high energy mode physics here. The mode transition is not accompanied with the symmetry breaking, though no symmetry change between the insulator, mode insulator, and the metal. This means that the transition should be first order or crossover. And in reality, at low temperature, the mode transition is a first order, and at high temperature is a crossover. And this first order transition has a critical endpoint at finite temperature. And this is a real phase diagram of the anti-ferromagnetic mode insulator, the temperature and pressure. At low pressure, namely in a regime of strong electron correlation, in that case, the system is insulator. And then this red dotted curve indicates that the first order transition. So the system is first order transition from insulator to metal across this boundary. And a superconductivity appears. And this parkerite superconductivity is not an intrinsic property. It's some mixture. Only threat of the superconducting portion is present here. So Maybe intrinsic phase diagram is a superconductivity here and more insulating extended in these regions. And the first of the critical endpoint is located around 40 Kelvin here and crossover at higher temperatures. So this is the comparison between the two strongly correlated electron systems. One is the heavy electron system, and this is the MOT systems. And it is well known that in heavy electron systems, the RKK1 interaction and the Kondo interactions are competing interactions. And these competing interactions gives the quantum phase transitions from the magnetic order state to from liquid state. Here, this quantum critical point, the Kondo and RKK1 is CLS competing. And in our case, in the MOT system, the competing interaction, competing energies are on-site Coulomb interactions and the electron kinetic energy. W means the bandwidth. Bandwidth is, characterizes the kinetic energy of electrons. So it's very similar. And this energy scale, the energy scale of U and W is, in our case, is several thousand kelvins. Okay, but in this case, experimentally observed, what is experimentally observed is a quantum phase transition, no first order transition. But in our case, transition is not quantum, first order transition. However, the important point is the first order critical endpoint is 40 Kelvin, only 40 Kelvin, but competing energy scale is several thousand Kelvin. So there is a vast energy scale between this first order transition and computing energy scale. So why not quantum critical behavior in this vast energy scales as seen in heavy electron systems? So, okay. Sorry, this is the same figures. First, three suggestions of the quantum critical behavior well above first order critical endpoint comes from the theoretical calculations performed in Tarahashi groups. And they did the single site DMFT calculations of the Hubble model. It's a very simple calculations, single site. This is a well-known phase diagram of MOT transitions, temperature and U interaction strengths, U. And this red curve indicates the first order MOT transition line and critical endpoint is reproduced in these calculations. And then crossover above TC, okay? And if you, if you take, if you make this bending MOT boundary to straight line, in that case, this crossover region is expected to have a landscape with mirror reflections between the metallic side and the insulating side. And what they did in calculation is they calculated the resistivity in by DMFT. Okay, that is it. This is the results, is a calculation. And they show that these resistivities, they calculated the resistivities in these planes. And then in the insulating side, the resistivities follows these universal curves. And in the metallic side, the resistivities is in another universal curve. So the resistivity shows a collapsion into the two universal curves. And this is the quantum critical scaling. So their conclusion is the above TC, the system behave like quantum critical fluid. So what we did is we did the same thing in experiments. So this is the experimental procedure, temperature and pressure. At fixed temperatures, pressure is varied using Helmholtz gas pressures. This is a very crucial point because usually when we do pressure experiments, we use the oil as a pressure medium. But oil is solidified at low temperatures. So in usual pressure experiments, we apply pressure at room temperatures and then cool the sample. But in these experiments, we have to vary pressure at low temperatures. So pressure medium should not be solidified. So the only pressure medium is helium. Helium is not solidified at low temperatures. So using helium gas pressure medium, the pressure is varied and resistivity is measured. This is low data of resistivity as pressure. And then the inflection point is the Wheaton point or crossover point. So the vertical axis, the pressure is normalized to the value at the inflection point. So like this. And then finally, the vertical axis is normalized here. So all of the resistivity behavior collapsed into the one universal curves. And in this normalization process, we use the Z nu values of 0.6. I skipped the details of the this scaling procedure because this is complicated. So anyway, what I want to stress here is the all of the resistivity data collapse to the universal curves. And this renormalization follows the quantum critical renormalization, quantum critical scaling. Okay, and if you take the reduced temperature as a horizontal axis, in that case, this universal curves bifurcates to the two curves. This is the insulating branch, and this is the metallic branch. This is not calculation. This is the experimental data. Nearly exactly superposed here. Then, this color, if this color is plotted in the temperature pressure plane, the phase time looks like this. This color corresponds to the reduced temperature, reduced resistivity here. So this dotted curve corresponds to the crossover line here and Wheaton line here. And if you the vertical axis normalizes to the critical pressure at each temperatures, the phase diagram looks like this, nearly mirror reflected. And this mirror reflected features against the Mott boundary is a very a hallmark of the quantum critical behavior of the transport. And from this analysis, we could deduce, extract the exponent for the quantum critical phenomena, Z nu, and we did the same thing, same analysis, same measurements and same analysis for additional two materials, this one and this one. So totally three materials. And three materials shows the, all of the materials show quantum critical behavior above, yes. You mean the critical sheet resistance maybe?
The RC.
RC means that the critical resistance at this boundary. So temperature dependent. So the very low, this anyway, this RC means that this, for example, at 50 kelvins, the RC is a resistance at this point. So so RC, this is normalized resistance. It considerably exceeds the Eiffel Rigel limit. because this is bad metal region. So, but I don't remember the exact resistivity values. But the, anyway, this is the far above the quantum resistance because the metal inside the boundary here. Just a moment. The order of 10, for example, at this temperature range, maybe around here, of the order of milliohm centimeter, and in these regions, maybe 10 milliohm centimeter here, and this 100 milliohm centimeter here. It's but the temperature dependence along this line is metallic. But it considerably exceeds that the Euclidean limit. It's a sort of bad metal region. Okay, the Z nu value, we can extract it. We could extract the Z nu value. Z nu value is in this range, 0.5 to 0.7. And this is a theoretical suggestions for quantum metal insulated transition. The predicted values are distributed in a wide range, but the, for our systems, the three materials, the values of the three materials are concentrated in these narrow regions. But I don't know these values are universal or non-universal because it's a similar, but it's a different 0.6, 0.5.
So why is
One scenario, but I don't know. But critical point is different.
Right.
What I can say is the critical point is different. This is for, the critical point is 20 Kelvin, this system, 40 Kelvin. And this is maybe quantum critical, no critical point. So the critical point is different. Frustration is also different. So what controls, what determines the Z nu? The Z nu is, I don't know.
Z nu for the critical endpoint.
Ah, no, no, well above.
Way bigger.
Bigger, well above. The critical exponent in the just vicinity of the TC is a different stuff, Okay, this is the comparison of the phase diagram of the two systems. This is a triangular system, and this is the scalar lattice-like system. So what I want to emphasize is at high temperature, in high energy scales, the both systems and all of the three systems we investigated shows similar quantum critical behaviors. So at high energies, my feeling is that in high energies, every mod system shows the universal quantum critical behavior, but Z nu may be different. But I'm not sure. Anyway, quantum critical scaling holds for all systems we investigated. However, the details of systems appears. Yes. Sorry, I can't catch you. You mean at higher temperatures?
Yeah.
At higher temperatures, the scaling breaks down. We think that it is a phonon contribution or other contribution may take place. I think, but I'm not sure. Anyway, scaling is okay in this maybe 150, but at higher temperatures, I don't know the reason. One candidate is a phonon, I think. And also, besides phonons, the DMFT calculation suggests that the quantum critical scaling works well in the intermediate energy scales. And DMFT also predicts that at high energies, it's a critical scaling breaks down. But they said they don't know the reason why. So anyway, it's an open question. So the details of systems appears at low energy scales. So depending on the frustration, for example, the frustration of the lattice, the ground state is different, quantum spin liquid or antiferromagnetic order. Or in the metallic side, even in the metallic side, the superconductivity in both cases, but the TC is lower in the triangular lattice system, and then, but in square lattice system, TC is higher, maybe 3 Kelvin and 11 Kelvin, 3 or 4 times different. And then later I'd like to touch this issue, the Sully gap. The Sully gap appears only in the metallic state in neighboring the antiferromagnetic insulators. So the details of the system or the characteristics of the system appears at low temperatures, but at high temperatures, everything seems the same, I think. Okay, I'm moving to the low temperature behavior. Okay, next is the magnetism in insulating phase. So it's an insulator, so charge degrees of freedom is frozen, completely frozen. So remaining degrees of freedom is spin. Okay, so the problem is the spins are ordered or not. This is the rough sketch of the history of the spin physics. And the Heisenberg interaction is very, very well known. In such a kind of the Heisenberg Hamiltonian, in that case, the only two spin. In that case, if J is positive, the antiparallel configuration is a stable one. And then if the spins are periodically located, like scalaris, in that case, nil state was considered to be the most stable state, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. However, interestingly, the Landau was strongly suspicious about this nil state. Landau was very, of course, clever guys, and he considered the quantum fluctuations. His idea was the quantum fluctuations breaks this nil state. So, but in reality, neutron experiments proved that the nil state is a real ground state. Okay, so interaction wins against the quantum fluctuation in the square lattice case. However, the Anderson proposed that the such a kind of quantum fluctuation is promoted, it's enhanced in the frustrated lattice, namely triangular lattice. He proposed that quantum spin liquid maybe are a ground state in triangular lattice in 1933. Since then, the experimentalists searched the quantum liquid state in real materials, but all of the efforts was unsuccessful. And 1990, the very rigorous numerical study was performed and predicted that the triangular, that is Heisenberg model, has a ground state of the 120 degree nil state. So this possibility, quantum spin liquid possibility, is strongly fade out. However, this is the Heisenberg model is one theoretical description of the spin system. But in real material, many interactions. So it is meaningful to pursue the realization of the spin liquid in real materials. We performed this possibility in organic materials. This is a comparison of the proton NMR experiments of the two materials. One is the nearly triangular lattice, and the other one is the deformed triangular lattice, square lattice-like materials. And this is frequency and NMR spectra. And NMR spectra means that the signal appears at the magnetic field, nuclear spin field, okay? So this is a frequency, but please convert in your mind frequency to magnetic field. So 164 Kelvin, 30 Kelvin, this line means that the nuclear spin fields a magnetic field corresponding to the 156 megahertz. This is corresponds to the magnetic field. This magnetic field exactly corresponds to the applied field. Okay, nuclear spin field, the applied field here, but below 27 kelvins, line splitting occurs. Line splitting means that there are several magnetic fields, nuclear spins. This means that besides applied field, there is an additional internal field generations. Okay, this is due to the spin orders.
Is this copper NMR?
No, proton NMR. This is proton NMR. So line splitting or the change of line shape is a clear indication of the magnetic ordering. Okay, in this deformed triangular lattice or square lattice-like material, the magnetic order occurs, surely. But in this triangular lattice materials, no change of the spectra down to 32 millikelvins. You see that the doublet, this doublet is due to the nuclear dipolar interactions, so doesn't matter. This doublet feature doesn't matter. What matters is the whether the spectra changes or not with temperature variations. So there is no internal field generations down to 32 millikelvin. And important point is the exchange interaction between the neighboring spins is 250 kelvins. So interaction is very strong. So of the order of these energies, but the 32 millikelvin is a four order of magnitude lower than the exchange interaction. Down to these energy scales, no orders. So we concluded that this system is in a spin-liquid state. More interesting feature comes from the magnetic measurements and the thermodynamic measurements. And this is the spin susceptibility as a function temperature. The right-hand side figure shows the specific heat divided by temperature versus T square. It's a conventional way of examining specific heat. Okay, in anti-ferromagnetic motor insulators, you see very sharp peak, sharp anomaly around 27 Kelvin. This is a clear indication of the magnetic ordering in conjunction with the NMR spectral change. And this is the insulator, so the gamma value should be vanishing. Okay, these materials shows vanishing gamma. And this is a spin-liquid material. The spin-liquid material is also insulator, spin-liquid insulator. No anomaly indicative of the magnetic ordering down to 2 kelvins. And finite value, at lowest temperature, 2 kelvin. And surprisingly, despite the insulating state, this spin-liquid insulator seems to have the finite gamma values around 30 millikelvin, some millijoule per kelvin square mole, in spite of insulator. So if you take the low temperature values of the spin susceptibility and the gamma, the Wilson ratio is a ratio of these two values, yields 1.6. 1.6 is a very acceptable values as a fermionic excitations. So some people suggest these two data is a manifestation of the spin of Fermi surfaces. Because these two behaviors are suggestive of the fermionic excitations. So they call the spinons. But I have to say that there is a controversial data on these issues. Thermal conductivity suggests a tiny gap, namely 0.2 5.4 kelvins. But this is very tiny compared with the J. J is 250 kelvin. But in this sense, yes.
So there's a fair variation in the T cubed components to the heat capacity.
Yeah.
So is that understood? Because that would be due to phonons?
Yes, it's a phonons. Yeah. It's anion is different between these materials and this material. So many materials in these families have so slope is different. But I'm not sure, but please, maybe ICL2, but in this case, many anion species in the insulating layers. So
the ICL2 compound.
Yeah.
What's the nail temperature?
23 Kelvin. 23.
So this is well below the nail temperature.
Yes, exactly.
So this should be mangan.
Also, could be
mangan. Yeah. Mangan, but in this case, the lattice specific is very large. Very large. So most of it is contribution from the lattice. So because if you measure the specific, I have no view glass, but if you see the C over T versus T over T square plot in a wide frequency range, there is no feature around 22 kelvins because it's a low dimensional system, and this nail. The fluctuations are large, and then that is specific is huge, so it's quite difficult to see the magnetic transitions in such a kind of the motor insulators, and also even in superconductors, there is only tiny peak in around 10 kelvins due to the superconductivity because lattice contribution is very huge. That is a disadvantageous point in organic materials. Anyway, this cube term, there is a very big difference in T cubic terms. Okay, so the real ground state is gapless or marginally gapped is still open question. But today, I'm not going to the details. This issue, I'd like to show you some more disorder effect of the spin naked or magnetic antiferromagnet. This was achieved by X-ray irradiation to the antiferromagnet. And the material is antiferromagnet here, so we irradiated X-ray this material. Magnetic order at low temperatures. And by X-ray radiations, what is damaged is the insulating layers. We know that by examining the IR spectra of the ET molecules and the anion. So in ET molecules, the vibration spectra of the stretching mode of the ET molecule does not so change so much, but in the anion layers, the CN stretching mode, this peak corresponds to this CN stretching mode, is seriously deteriorated by X-ray radiation. So we think that by irradiating the X-ray to these materials, the anion layer is damaged. So the such a kind of the random potential. Acts to the conducting electrons. But I'd like to know that the no Curie spin is induced by X-ray radiation. This is the spin susceptibility as a function of temperatures, no Curie term. This is a very important point. Okay, we introduced disorder to the antiferromagnet, and what occurs? Okay, this is the NMR spectra before X-ray irradiation. the same data, the same spectra as I showed you. The below 27 Kelvin, line splitting is clear. However, after X-ray irradiations, no change of the NMR spectra, down to 300 millikelvin. Okay, this is the superposition of the spectra from 100 Kelvin to 340 millikelvin. The spectra is nearly perfectly the same. This means that no internal field generations. This means the spin ligand is generated by X-ray radiation. So the results suggest that by introducing disorder to classical magnet, the classical magnet is changed to the quantum spin ligand. And this is the NMR relaxation rate, 1 over T1. This is a peak formation at nil temperature is a typical behavior of the NMR relaxation rate. This is the manifestation of the critical slowing down and magnetically here. This is the data for before the X-ray irradiation. But after irradiations, no peak. This means the critical slowing down is also going and gone. So no spectral change, no critical slowing down, down to low temperature. This means that by introducing disorder, the classical magnet is changed to the quantum spin ligand. But I have to mention on the charge degrees of freedom. This is resistivity as a function of temperature. Before X-ray radiations, this is a modern insulator, so the behavior is gapped, Arrhenius-like temperature dependence. However, after X-ray irradiations, the resistivity is changed to the gapless Mott Anderson insulator. The temperature dependence of this resistivity is well fitted to the variable range hopping. So this means that the charge degrees of freedom is also largely influenced by X-ray irradiations. So from these experimental observations, we think that there are two suggestions. One is the spin ligand is residing just behind frustrated antiferromagnet. This shows up by introducing disorder. The second suggestion is spin ligand may be ubiquitous in Mott Anderson insulators. This is the cartoon behind our idea. And Mott Anderson insulators, wave functions are extending irregularly. Okay? So the interaction between the spins are very complicated and extended. Such a complicated nature and extended nature of the wave functions gives the very, very complicated interaction between spins. And this can cause the quantum spin ligand. In this sense, there are interesting theoretical suggestions on the magnetism of the Mott Anderson insulator. That is the spinon deconfined, namely spinons are mobile, but charge is localized. Charge on glass, they called. Chargeons are localized, fixed at lattices, but a spin degrees of freedom are freely mobile in the Mott Anderson insulator. The spins are not so much influential by the disorder. That is their suggestions. So we should do more works on this the magnetism of the Mott Anderson insulators. Many, many Mott Anderson insulators are present. But to my knowledge, there is not so many experimental research on magnetism and Mott Anderson insulators. Okay, I'm moving on to the next topic, the preformed Cooper pairs. Preformed pairs. Okay, this is a superconductivity. It's a cartoon, and in the normal state, the Bloch wave uncorrelated. And the phase is random. But in the superconductive state, the The phase of the block wave functions are coherent, and then this is the Cooper pair state. And in usual, above TC, the such a normal state, number of normal state electrons is constant. It's a carrier number. But below TC, the Cooper pair formed, and then the unpaired electrons, namely block electrons, called quasi-particle, the number of quasi-particle is decreasing in exponential functions if the Cooper pair has a finite binding energy in that case. And namely, this is the vertical axis indicates a density or number of the unpaired electrons. The NMR relaxation rate can count this, the unpaired electrons. So if electron pairing is conventional, in that case, above TC, the number of the normal electrons is constant. And then it should decrease below TC. The NMR relaxation rate, 1 over T1T, counts the number of the density. So I do not enter into the details of the NMR relaxation rate, but please understand this. 1 over T1T is a measure of the number of the unpaired electrons. OK, we did the NMR experiments of 1 over T1T for two materials. One is the metallic state neighboring the anti-ferromagnetic molten insulator. The other material is the in the metallic state neighboring spin liquid. Okay. In the metallic state neighboring spin liquid, its behavior is conventional. And in these green regions, high temperature regions, the system is molten insulator. So 1 over T1T is increasing. This is the conventional behavior of the molten insulator. And across this crossover line here, and 1 over T1T is decreasing. And in the metallic state, 1 over T1T is constant. This constant value corresponds to the density of the unpaired electrons. It's a constant. So this is expected behavior. And below TC, suddenly 1 over T1T is decreasing. So Cooper pair formation occurs, and then unpaired electrons. The number of unpaired electrons is decreasing here. However, in the metallic state neighboring the anti-ferromagnetic molten insulator, in that case, the 1 over T1T is not constant in the even in the metallic state. 1 over T1T is decreasing below 20 Kelvin. But in this case, TC is 12 Kelvin. So the behavior is unconventional. It seems that some Cooper pair formed at high temperatures, say twice of TC. So we pursued these behaviors as a function of pressure, like this. And this is a phase diagram here. And this is mode transition line and superconductivity here. So we apply pressure. At ambient pressure, materials is residing here, and 20 megapascal. 50 megapascal, 100 megapascal. Okay, far from the mode boundaries, 1 over T1T is nearly constant. It's a conventional behavior. Unpaired electron, the density of an unpaired electron is constant, okay. However, when the system approaches the mode boundary here, low pressure side, in that case, 1 over T1T is increasing, and then this decrease with temperature is enhanced. Here, I like to call this behavior as pseudo gap. Pseudo gap is enhanced in the vicinity of the first order mode transition. But interesting point, another interesting point is such a kind of the enhancement of 1 over T1T, and the pseudo gap behavior is not seen in night shift, NMR night shift. Night shift means spin susceptibility. Spin susceptibility does not change. And this is the three-dimensional plot of this material. So summarizing the experimental feature, when system approaches the mode boundary, 1 over T1T is enhanced. And there, pseudo gap is enhanced. Pseudo gap appears. So what is the origin? So we applied magnetic field. And organic materials is superconducting at low temperature, but the TC is low compared with high TC superconductivity. This means this is disadvantageous, but good thing is the we can kill the superconductivity by laboratory magnetic field. So we applied magnetic field from 0.9 Tesla to 18 Tesla. At a low magnetic field or parallel magnetic field, the Sur gap behavior occurs, and then bulk superconductivity occurs. But at high magnetic field, this bulk superconductivity is killed. At the same time, Sur gap is also recovered. This means the Sur gap is closely related to this superconductivity. So we concluded that the Sur gap is due to the superconducting fluctuations preformed by Cooper pairs. And we, preformed the Cooper pairs. And we did the same experiments in other materials. These two materials are far from the Mott boundaries. These materials show not so profound behavior, surrogate behavior. And for these materials, no surrogate behaviors. So this means that this surrogate behavior is enhanced in the vicinity of the Mott boundary, namely Cooper pair, preformed Cooper pairs is enhanced in the vicinity of the Mott transition. And so due to correlation effect. And more important, as the system is highly two-dimensional, more highly two-dimensional in these directions. So if this fluctuation, this preformed Cooper pair is due to the low-dimensional effect, in that case, this material should show most enhanced surrogate behaviors. But there is no behavior. This means that this preformed Cooper pair is not due to the low-dimensional effect, such as Azalma-Sovralkin, Mark-Thompson. Does not work in this NMR experiment. So this is due to the phase fluctuations. The conventional low-dimensional effect is the fluctuations or the parameter amplitude. But in this case, not the amplitude fluctuation, it's due to the phase fluctuations, which is called preformed Cooper pairs. So two features in our experiments. One is the 1 over T1T is enhanced on approaching the boundary. And Sur gap is also enhanced near the boundaries. But these two features have coherent explanations. This is the phase diagram, and in the Mott insulating side, the antiferromagnetic order like this, and in the metallic side, the Fermi surface like this. And when a system approaches the Mott boundaries, the site is more, sites are more singly occupied. This means the spins are more localized. And then pi pi antiferromagnetic fluctuation is enhanced like this. This is the pi pi order, but in this case, in these regions, this is fluctuated. This means a pi pi. Pi pi vector here. And at the same time, the sites are more singly occupied. In that case, the uncertainty in the occupation number is less. This means the, due to the uncertain principle, the phase fluctuations is enhanced. This means the preformed Cooper pairs are all enhanced. And if the preformed Cooper pairs have the D-wave-like nature, in that case, the Sur gap opens here. So 1 over T1T proves the antiferromagnetic fluctuations here. And then if the preformed Cooper pair occurs, the Sur gap occurs in this hot spot. So this is the reason why Sur gap appears in 1 over T1T. But night shift probes the spin density, spin susceptibility in the whole Fermi surface. So this is the reason why night shift is not so sensitive to the preformed Cooper pairs. So in this sense, these preformed Cooper pairs are phenomena strongly intertwined with the antiferromagnetic fluctuations. And this is compared with the Sur gap in high-TC cuprates. In high-TC cuprates, as a doping gives the charge degrees of freedom. It's a vacant, many, many vacant. It's a So charge reorganization or something like that, in that charge release freedom is vital in doped systems. So competing orders are there, and then maybe superconducting fluctuations at the same time going on. But in your case, no doping, the bond filling is fixed at half. So no competing orders. So in this organic materials, we succeeded in capturing the preformed Cooper pairs free from competing orders as encountered in ITC cuplets. Time is over.
So you're at the end, but maybe just a few minutes.
You're done.
Okay, we should stop. I should stop.
Yeah.
Okay. So I skipped the doping explanation. Okay. Only one. Oh, this is the high. We have a doped silicate. This material. This material shows a nearly triangular lattice. And then 11% whole doped. So metal. The important point is here. This is a spin liquid, non-doped spin liquid. Spin susceptibility of the non-doped spin liquid is insulated here. So resistivity is insulating. And this is 11% whole doped spin liquid. Metal. And the superconductivity occurs at low temperatures. The interesting point is the susceptibility normalized to J shows the exactly the same for non-doped and undoped cases. Spin's channel behave like that, exactly the same. However, in the charge sector, behavior is different. This is a clear manifestation of the spin-charge separations. And this is a clear evidence that this doped triangularis carries spin liquid and metal. And this is the metallic state is very interesting, and the non-film liquid-like behavior at low temperatures, and then as a function pressures, non-film liquid to film liquid crossover occurs, and then several interesting features. So the time is running out, and then BCS and BC crossover occurs in these materials. And I'm sorry. So, conclusion: in non-doped MOT systems, we have a variety of phenomena, but the important point is at high energy, at high temperatures, everything looks similar. But at low temperatures, a variety of phenomena occurs depending on the detail of the systems, such as frustration. And doped angularis shows doped spin liquid. So we have doped spin liquid in real materials. This is first evidence of the doped spin liquid, I think. And this doped spin liquid shows non-film liquid behaviors. But I'm sorry, I cannot go to the details of the last topics. Thank you for your attention.
So maybe
in the radiation experiment.
Which experiment?
The radiation experiment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What's the leading effect on the system? Like you said, it damages the insulating layer, but you had argued earlier in the talk that the insulating layers was just there for separating the ET molecules, right?
Yeah.
And so it seems to be like, how do you tie the two things together?
Yeah, I don't know what exactly occurs in the ET layers, because we have no experimental evidence for the change in the conducting layers. And what I have is the data on the destruction of the bond of the insulating layers. So we think that maybe by X-ray irradiations, the insulating layers is a disorder. Maybe CN bond is broken. And then ET molecules, electrons in the ET conducting ET layers feel the disordered potential. That is the nature of the disorder. that occurs in these systems, I think. But I don't know more detail.
The line doesn't change
whatsoever. No change. Ah, okay. No change. So in the iterators, it's we have no experimental data on something happens in the ET layers. So the line shape is very, very beautiful. It's nearly exactly the same. Yeah. Like this, no change.
Yes, so also with regard to the radiation, what type of X-ray radiation is it? Is it of a particular energy? Is it broadband?
White, yes, yes. Yeah. So, yeah.
And it's covering the whole sample? Because the reason I'm asking is you could imagine doing a synchrotron X-ray experiment where you have a very spatially localized.
Yeah, yeah. This is laboratory molybdenum X-ray.
Yeah, so covering the whole sample.
Covering the whole sample.
Yeah. So did you look for the effect of varying the energy, having, because you would presumably be doing different types of damage with different energies, right?
Maybe, but in our experience, they're limited to the white, one kind of the X-ray, so okay. So we can do the tune. We can tune the energies, okay, as you say. And then, yeah, in future work, I think.
So a follow-up question about this irradiated sample. So how does the charge gap compare to the to the clean sample?
Sorry, charge?
How does the charge gap compare to the
no charge clean gap sample? After irradiation?
Yes.
No charge gap, because variable range hopping reproduce the experimental data very well. So no, if you plot the resistivity as a function of the T over the activation type plot, no charge gap. It's a line, it's a bending. So we think that the charge gap is completely closed, I think.
So have you looked at the time scale of the charge fluctuations by doing experiments such as NQR?
In these experiments, we have no NQL nuclei. So unfortunately, we do not. We cannot do NQL experiments. The couple is okay, but the couple is in insulating layer, so it's hopeless.
Okay, so let's thank the speaker again.